La revista de la semana. Ajustes en la conducción económica argentina. Aunque la renuncia de Martín Guzmán como jefe de las finanzas argentinas esta semana causó sorpresa, por otro lado, desde hacía algún tiempo que el otrora poderoso ministro de Economía se hallaba en el centro de las desavenencias entre el presidente Alberto Fernández y la vicepresidenta Cristina Fernández de Kirchner. La situación se había hecho más insostenible por las negociaciones con el Fondo Monetario Internacional, el FMI, en relación a préstamos contraídos por el gobierno de Mauricio Macri y que han contribuido a crear una crisis económica que afecta seriamente a la Argentina y que en el plano político coloca al gobierno peronista en un complicado dilema. Por un lado, tratar de negociar los términos de la deuda contraída por Macri, que no trajo beneficio alguno al país, mientras por otro, hacer un difícil balance entre lo que su propio pueblo espera, que en todo caso es la resolución de problemas de inflación y deterioro general de sus condiciones de vida. Como se sabe, las exigencias del FMI a los países a los que les presta dinero siempre se traducen en cortes presupuestarios y en otras medidas que van en detrimento de los sectores pobres y medios de la población. Guzmán en su momento argumentó que se había salvaguardado los recursos para programas sociales y otras medidas como las regulaciones y subsidios tarifarios, pero al parecer ello no fue del todo así. Guzmán había estado presionando por medidas que apuntaban a la reducción de los subsidios tarifarios y otras que, sin duda, eran resultado de las recetas del FMI. A poco más de un año de elecciones presidenciales y con un panorama político complejo para el gobierno, tales medidas no eran las más sabias. Además, dejando de lado las consideraciones políticas, lo cierto es que las recetas del FMI, apuntando a reducciones del gasto público y, sobre todo, los recortes de los beneficios a la población, cualquiera que ellos sean, no contribuyen a resolver el ahora urgente problema de la inflación. Este es un tema que afecta seriamente a la Argentina, pero que, como en todos los otros casos que se ven a nivel mundial, no tiene solo causas internas, sino que, como bien sabemos, es en este instante un problema global. No es un misterio para nadie que el presidente Fernández y su vicepresidenta Cristina se han ido distanciando en todo este último tiempo. El presidente Fernández, por su propia investidura, es quien conduce el país, eso es verdad. Pero el capital político del Frente de Todos, el movimiento amplio peronista que da sustento al gobierno, pertenece fundamentalmente a Cristina. Esta dualidad, que por momentos ha tensionado al gobierno, no podía prolongarse más sin que hubiera alguna instancia de reparación de las fisuras. Un llamado de Stella Carlotto al presidente Fernández y luego de este a Cristina allanó el camino para una cena de ambos en que intentaron limar diferencias. En este contexto también se develaba como insostenible la postura de Guzmán, que de haber logrado lo que pedía, la salida de su ministerio de funcionarios cercanos a Cristina y que se oponían a las medidas que el exministro quería implementar, simplemente hubiera arriesgado el quiebre de la coalición de gobierno. Eso no era deseable ni por el presidente Fernández ni por la vicepresidenta Cristina. Para el gobierno, la salida de Guzmán y la designación en su lugar de Silvina Batakis vino a aliviar la tensión entre Fernández y Cristina, a la vez que reafirmó lo que analistas en Buenos Aires han venido diciendo todo este tiempo para mejorar las fortunas del gobierno. El camino angosto que le queda al gobierno nacional para llegar competitivo a las elecciones del próximo año es cerrar filas e impulsar medidas que frenen la inflación y recompongan la capacidad adquisitiva de los salarios. Por cierto, es más fácil decirlo que hacerlo, pero en las actuales circunstancias la nueva ministra tendrá que poner todo su esfuerzo en restablecer la estabilidad económica del país, pero sobre todo asegurarle a la población que los efectos de la crisis no la terminen pagando los trabajadores y demás sectores más vulnerables económicamente. Por de pronto, en una de sus primeras declaraciones, ella afirmó que los salarios no son la causa de la inflación y reafirmó que el propósito del gobierno es no solo recuperar lo perdido en términos reales, sino también ganar poder adquisitivo. Mientras la oposición ha explotado la salida de Guzmán para intentar profundizar las tensiones entre el presidente y su vicepresidenta, lo que por cierto era de esperar, por otro lado, era evidente que la presencia del ahora exministro era un obstáculo para las medidas económicas y políticas de reafirmación de los objetivos redistributivos necesarios para que el Frente de Todos recupere el apoyo popular perdido en las elecciones parlamentarias pasadas. The Weekly Review, Adjustments in Argentina's Economic Management. Although the resignation of Martín Guzmán as Argentina's finance chief this week came as a surprise, the once powerful Minister of Economy had for some time been at the center of disagreements between President Alberto Fernández and Vice President Cristina Fernández de Kirchner. The situation had been made more untenable by the negotiations with the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, in relation to loans contracted by the previous government of Mauricio Macri and which have contributed to create an economic crisis that is seriously affecting Argentina and which, on the political level, places the Peronist government in a complicated dilemma. On the one hand, trying to negotiate the terms of the debt contracted by Macri, which did not bring any benefit to the country, while on the other hand, making a difficult balance in front of its own people who are facing inflation problems and general deterioration of their living conditions. As it is known, the IMF's demands to the countries to which it lends money always translate into budget cuts and other measures that are detrimental to the poor and middle sectors of the population. Guzmán at the time argued that resources for social programs and other measures such as regulations for utility fees and subsidies had been safeguarded, but it seems that this was not entirely the case. Guzmán had been pushing for measures aimed at reducing subsidies and others that were undoubtedly the result of IMF prescriptions. A little more than a year before the presidential elections, and with a complex political panorama for the government, such measures were not the wisest. Moreover, leaving aside the political considerations, the truth is that the IMF's prescriptions pointing to reductions in public spending and above all cuts in benefits to the population, whatever they may be, do not contribute to solve the now urgent problem of inflation. This is an issue that seriously affects Argentina, but, as in all other cases seen worldwide, it has not only internal causes, but, as we all know, it is now a global problem. It is not mystery to anyone that President Fernández and his Vice President Cristina have been drifting apart in recent times. President Fernández, by his own investiture, is the one who leads the country, that is true. But the political capital of the Frente de Todos, the broad Peronist movement that supports the government, belongs basically to Cristina. This duality, which at times has strained the government, could not be prolonged any longer without some instance of repairing the fissures. A call from Stella Carlotto to President Fernández and then from the latter to Cristina paved the way for a dinner between the two in which they tried to iron out differences. In this context, Guzmán's position was also untenable. If he had achieved what he was asking for, the departure from his ministry of officials close to Cristina who were opposed to the measures the former minister wanted to implement, he would have simply risk the breakup of the government coalition. This was undesirable neither for President Fernández nor for Vice President Cristina. For the government, the
departure of Guzmán and the appointment of Silvina Batakis in his place came to ease the tension between Fernández and Cristina, at the same time that it reaffirmed what an analyst in Buenos Aires had been saying all this time to improve the fortunes of the government. The narrow road left for the national government to reach next year's elections competitively is to close ranks and promote measures to curb inflation and restore the purchasing power of salaries. Certainly, this is easier said than done, but in the current circumstances, the new minister will have to put all her efforts into reestablishing the economic stability of the country, but above all, to assure the population that the effects of the crisis will not end up being paid by the workers and other more economically vulnerable sectors. For the time being, in one of his, or rather her first statements, she affirmed that wages are not the cause of inflation and reaffirmed that the purpose of the government is not only to recover what has been lost in real terms, but also to gain purchasing power. While the opposition has exploited Guzmán's departure to try to deepen the tensions between the president and his vice president, which was certainly to be expected, on the other hand, it was evident that the presence of the now former minister was an obstacle to the economic and political measures of reaffirmation of the redistributive objectives necessary for the Frente de Todos to recover the political and popular support, which was lost in the last parliamentary elections and is necessary to regain for the presidential elections next year. Good day.
Tus alas de fuego surcan los Andes y el litoral, inspirando los sueños de un pueblo por libertad. Desciende, oh Pariguana, retorna al verde de tu totoral, gritando taruquitas tristes al pie del volcán. La Pachamama vistió con devoción la noche azul, y en cada constelación Pariguana reconoció la luz. Un saber milenario ha sangrado en su corazón, oráculos pacarinas danzan su premonición. Incendia los atardeceres de mito, laguna y paz. Agita serranos versos, vuelve el fulgor primordial. No temas, Pariguana, tu dulce anhelo perdurará. Bendicen los cuatro vientos que arrullan el pajonal. Inti taitaiki, kiyamamaiki, sumakta hawanko, bawas haikita. La Pachamama vistió con devoción la noche azul, y en cada constelación Pariguana reconoció la luz. Un saber milenario ha sembrado en su corazón. Oráculos pacarinas danzan su premonición.
Bueno, y ahora vamos al fichero latino de hoy, 10 de julio del 2022. Entre los anuncios de interés público tenemos dosis de refuerzo de la vacuna contra el COVID-19. Están abiertas las inscripciones para vacunarse con la segunda vacuna de refuerzo o cuarta dosis para mayores de 18 años. Consultar y reservar en línea en el sitio web Clic Santé, ya sea en francés o en inglés.
Eventos. Lara Wonga, Flamenco Jazz, jueves 14 de julio a las 20 horas en el cabaret Flamenco Jazz Cavalis. Esto es en el 5175A Avenue du Parc.
Entre las publicaciones tenemos las ediciones en francés e inglés del libro Presencia chilena en la Belle Provence. Se hallan a la venta en la librería de la Universidad de Montreal, esto es en el 3200 de la Rue Chambrian, en la librería Bertrand, en el 430 de Saint-Pierre, en el viejo Montreal, en el internet, en la cadena Renobre, en la librería Argos, en el 1841A de Saint-Catherine Oeste, y en la librería Paragraph, esto es en el 2220 de McGill Avenue, McGill College Avenue. Precio del ejemplar es de $10 más impuestos.
El tiempo para hoy, según Environment Canada, la Oficina Meteorológica Nacional de Canadá. Soleado con una temperatura máxima de 27 grados. Para esta noche, despejado con una mínima de 19 grados.
Y recuerde que si usted o su organismo comunitario tienen alguna información que desean difundir en el fichero latino, comuníquense con nosotros a Latin Time a nuestra dirección electrónica laplaza.info@gmail.com.
O también puede enviarnos un mensaje en Facebook. Vaya a www.facebook.com/tiempolatino.latintime y de paso denos un like. Nuestra página Facebook también se actualiza ahora diariamente con noticias y reportajes sobre lo que ocurre en América Latina y el mundo. Síganos en Facebook.
Y Tiempo Latino es escuchado en América Latina y en todo el mundo a través del internet entre el sitio de CKUT en la siguiente dirección, www.ckut.ca.
Y usted puede acceder también a nuestro programa en cualquier otro horario, simplemente yendo al archivo de CKUT en el sitio web ya indicado y presionando Latin Time.
esto ha sido todo por hoy. Tiempo Latino es una producción del Taller Latinoamericano de Comunicaciones.
Latin Time is a Latin American Communications Workshop production.
Estuvimos hoy con ustedes.
Our team today.
Daniel Lara y Sergio Martínez en las voces.
Sergio Martínez and Daniel Lara at the mics.
Y Rommel Cajavilca en la producción técnica, la compaginación y la selección musical.
And Rommel Cajavilca in the technical production, edition and music selection.
Manténgase en la sintonía de CKUT, nuestro próximo programa, The International Radio Report.
Stay tuned to CKUT, next, The International Radio Report.
Tengan todos ustedes un feliz domingo.
Have a happy Sunday.
Thomas Witherspoon of Asheville, North Carolina, and you're tuned to the International Radio Report, 30 minutes of news about radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the International Radio Report for Sunday, July the 10th, 2022. My name's Sheldon. I am here with Jill. We thank you for tuning in to us today here on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Our email address, if you'd like to reach us, radioreport@yahoo.com. You can listen to us live streaming or archived at CKUT's website, ckut.ca. Our Facebook group has 4 new members this week. We're at 810 members. We welcome Michael, Julie, Medin, and Angelo to the group. And our YouTube channel is International Radio Report. We have 659 subscribers. You can go there and listen to the current show or previous shows on the channel. So we invite you to go check out all those different ways to access us here at the International Radio Report. Now, today, as we're recording on Friday, the 8th of July, some of you may not be able to access services that you normally have.
Nope.
Something big is going on in Canada.
Yep. So Rogers Communications is having a major outage out of all of Canada for a smartphone, for internet access. And I'm trying right now as I'm not getting any communications.
For those that don't know, Rogers is one of the major providers in Canada. We don't have a lot, but Rogers is one of the big ones. The news broke this morning that it was affecting parts of Ontario. Some radio stations were off the air, Interact terminals, ATMs not working, and other services, telephone, cell phone service. But it seems to be spreading now as we're getting more and more reports coming in.
I got the news because a friend of mine said, hey, my phone's not working. And I looked at my phone, and since we're on the same company, and I look at my phone, it's like, oh, mine's not working either. And it affects a lot of stuff. There's radio stations that are off the air because of this. There are ATMs that don't work, Interact cash transfers. There's all sorts of services, even some 911 emergency services that are not working. There's actually a government official that called Rogers and said, look, you better fix this real fast because it's really bad right now.
The problem is they don't really seem at this point to know exactly what the problem is.
Nope.
So they're having to investigate first and then figure out, you know, how quickly can we get things back up again. So, different people are starting to, as I said, as we're recording this afternoon on Friday, news reports are flying all over the place, everywhere you turn. So we'll probably have some more news. Hopefully things will be back to normal shortly, but we'll update you on next week's show, or we'll put some messages on our Facebook page as well as hopefully things start to return to normal. But, you know, we always talk about how fragile we are with these systems that we depend on so much, and the impact that they have on so many different things. You know, a radio station going off the air for a little while, okay, you know, transmitter problem, something like that. You start messing around with people's cell phones and people's banking accounts and credit cards and all that sort of stuff. People get really nervous really quickly. So anyways, we'll keep a watch on that for you, and you can follow the stories yourself. There'll be a lot of looking into this afterwards too, to, you know, try to prevent things like this from happening again. So hopefully they learn something from it.
And make us reflect upon why we should let these companies become so huge also.
Yep, that's another thing. Spread it around a little bit so that if one goes down, you got some backups that you can fall back on. So anyways, something going on with the CRTC. This is an ongoing story that's actually been carrying on since 2020.
So the CRTC is telling Radio Canada to apologize for offensive language on the air. This is by the Canadian Press. So the CRTC has ordered Radio Canada to apologize after a host and commentator made a repeated use of the N-word on the air. The Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission says the public broadcaster violated Canadian broadcasting policy objectives and values and did not do enough to mitigate the effect the word could have on its audience. The decision stems from a 2020 episode of a radio show in which commentator Simon Jourdain and host Annie Desrochers discussed a petition to demand the dismissal of a Concordia University professor who had quoted a famous book with the N-word in the title. During the discussion, Jourdain and Desrochers repeated the full title of Pierre Vallière's controversial 1968 take on Quebec history several times. A listener filed a complaint with the CRTC after first being told by Radio Canada's ombudsman that the use of the word in that specific context did not contravene its journalistic standards and practices. The CRTC disagreed and told Radio Canada to apologize to the complainant in writing and submit a plan to ensure that it better addresses similar issues in the future. This is the report by the Canadian Press, was first published on June 30th, 2022.
Now, we have some follow-up to this. There's been a fallout, and this comes from Christopher Nardi in the Montreal Gazette on July the 5th. Prominent Quebecers call on Radio Canada to fight the CRTC ruling criticizing a radio segment that included the N-word. A host of politicians, former and current Radio Canada employees, and journalism advocates are calling on the public broadcaster to fight back against a new CRTC ruling criticizing a radio segment that featured the N-word four times. A drove of influential Radio Canada current and former journalists, star hosts, and even ombudsmen are pushing back, saying that they are alarmed by the CRTC ruling, which they view as an attack on journalism and freedom of expression. And they go in to talk about the various people who have commented on this. Carolyn J. Simard saying, "The majority decision has taken a step I cannot take." Over the weekend and on Monday, a growing number of Quebec media and political voices expressed their opposition to the ruling as well. In an open letter published Sunday, nearly a dozen former Radio Canada executives or ombudsmen called on the public broadcaster to appeal the decision. The Fédération Professionnelle des Journalistes du Québec, the province's largest journalist association, also published a statement calling the decision a dangerous precedent. over 50 current Radio Canada headliners published their own letter demanding that Radio Canada disavow the concerning ruling and contest it vigorously. This seems to be far from over.
Oh, yeah.
The ruling was issued by CRTC and gave Radio Canada instructions of how they were to apologize and statements they were supposed to make on the air, etc. Now it seems that there's opposition to that.
There was an interesting article that I had read that they were mentioning that in 2008, the CRTC had issued a statement saying that, you know, they weren't there to be the police of what is being said on the air. And now, obviously, they are the police trying to say, oh, well, you did something bad here. I think the biggest problem is obviously the N-word should never be used in the context that it's been used as a bad word in the past. Definitely. That should not happen. But using it in a way where you're talking about a book or, you know, anything, art or whatever, in a polite way, just because the title has that N-word in it, I think we got to make a difference between, yeah, we are talking about something from the past that was written with that N-word. You know, it's difficult. I think maybe we're a little overly sensitive right now.
Well, we had a story a couple of weeks ago where we used the F word a couple times. Yeah. In the article. There were no complaints. Somebody even wrote to us and said, wow, you know, you must have heard from people. When you do something in the context of the issue that you're reporting on, normally that's the protection that you have is,
yeah,
you know, it is part and parcel of the story that you're talking about. In this particular case, the title of a book, which was allowed to be published, the book is still out there. It's still being sold. People still reference it.
Yeah.
For one person to take objection to it. And normally a complaint goes to the Canadian Broadcast Standards Council, not directly to the CRTC. That's sort of a middle step that involves broadcasting in particular, the Canadian Broadcast Standards Council. And they normally deal with complaints themselves. This one has gone up a level, and it's all the way at the CRTC level. So it's a little bit different animal that we're talking about here.
And I think these government organizations are all right now walking on a very thin line. And when something like this happens, they try to be on the side of, well, you know, we've got to be apologize. We always have to be nice and perfect and never use words that are offensive for some people or, you know, say things that shouldn't be said on the air. And it seems they always go on the side of, yeah, well, you should apologize. Mm. And they never take into context the way that it was used to talk, in this case, about a book, simply.
Yeah, the story goes all the way back to when this professor in university was talking to the students about the book.
Yep.
And that's where the whole thing got started. And then, you know, it just kind of snowballed from there. So we certainly haven't heard the end of this. I'm sure there'll be more stories on this. We'll keep an eye out for you.
Yep.
in the weeks and months ahead, I'm sure. So we go from that to a very, very positive story that we're getting out of Radio Inc.
So apparently, radio's reach is still massive. With the renewed love for audio in recent years, spurred by podcasting and the onslaught of new technologies for consumers to listen, radio's reach among the U.S. population is still massive. That's according to the latest Audio Today report from Nielsen. Nielsen reports that radio still reaches 93% of American population. That includes 93% of the 18-plus population and 98% of the 50 and over crowd. The 18-34 demo is the lowest, but still stands at 87%, according to Nielsen. The ratings firm concludes that only AM/FM radio can deliver the scale advertisers need. Radio often gets criticized for not being relevant to the younger generations. According to Nielsen, in that 18 to 34 demo, where radio reaches 87%, no other audio service comes close. Spotify lands at 41%, Pandora 21%, Apple Music 18%, Amazon Music at 14%, and satellite radio at 7%. Nielsen states that radio generates 55% more incremental reach than streaming music, podcasting, and satellite radio. The radio industry had recognized that many listeners, while still listening, are moving to their streams. Nielsen's report confirms that theory. In the third quarter of 2020, 7% of radio's listeners were doing so on a radio station stream. In the first quarter of this year, that number jumped to 12%. Nielsen also reported the obvious that radio's most out-of-home use was being done in the car, and that 70% of all radio listening is done outside the home. As mentioned earlier in this story, podcasting has helped fuel a new surge in audio listening. The Nielsen report states that half of daily podcast listeners started listening to podcasts in the past 2 years alone, and they are listening to more shows more often. The increase in podcast listening started with the pandemic, according to Nielsen. So it's nice to see that radio still has a big reach, and I think for advertisers, they should listen, because that's where maybe you should put most of your money.
Yeah, particularly on a local level. You know, when you're listening to things like even satellite radio, some of the channels don't have advertising, some of them do. The advertising that you're hearing is of a, you know, they're national firms, they're covering like the whole continent or what have you. But the little local store that wants to attract people, the local business that wants to attract people, the best way for those people, those business owners, to reach an audience is going to be radio. Yeah. You know, they might be able to afford television, but it's generally more expensive. There's more production included and, you know, cost involved in putting an ad on television. Radio can be done relatively inexpensively. Depending on the rates change, depending on the station's ratings and what have you. But I still think, you know, with these numbers, it's showing that this is the way to reach. And streaming the stations is still going to reach the people with the advertising, because the streaming does include the ads. Yep. So it is a smart way to go. And I would think any business is going to look at those numbers and say, yeah, you know, we're not going to pull out our ads now, because you know, we'd be cutting off all these people.
We got to be careful also on the advertising side. When we do podcasts, unless that podcast is very specific for an audience in a specific location, podcasts that reach international audience, well, maybe your product is not international. So advertising there is not a way of doing it, unless you're, you know, a big company that sells your product across the world. You know, the local pizzeria isn't really going to have an advertising on a podcast that talks to people that you're not even sure if someone's listening close to the place.
Yeah, so, or if radio, anyone's listening at all.
Yeah, and radio is great for that, because radio is very local, and that's the place that most of these advertisers definitely need to be.
Interesting.
Yep.
Nice to see those numbers, though. It's encouraging for radio, I'm sure. We next move across the world over to Turkey, where something interesting is going on. The US AGM condemns the censorship by Turkish Broadcasting Authority. This comes from the Association for International Broadcasting's news desk. The US AGM acting CEO Kılıç Çal spoke out against the Turkish government's June 30th blocking of online news by international broadcasters, including the Voice of America, VOA's Turkish programming, and all of 32 language services of German international broadcaster Deutsche Welle were censored on last Thursday when the Turkish authority responsible for media control, RTUK, restricted access to their websites. With the attempted blocking of Voice of America and Deutsche Welle, RTUK has made an alarming choice to pave the way for internet censorship. Audiences in Turkey deserve access to fact-based news about the world around them. Despite this latest attack on press freedom, USAGM will not be deterred in its mission to support the free flow of information to people in Turkey and across the globe. We oppose this move as a thinly veiled effort to censor unfavorable press coverage, said acting VOA director Yolanda Lopez. Upon learning that our site is now blocked, we firmly object to this latest action in Turkey's efforts to restrict Voice of America's ability to deliver accurate and objective news to its Turkish-speaking audience. Through circumvention tools and other means, VOA will not be deterred. In February 2022, RTUK had called on VOA to obtain a license that would have allowed the Turkish government to censor editorial content. News of Turkey's action spread quickly on social media in Turkey yesterday. Options to circumvent this censorship are in place, and related information is available to audiences on social media.
Once again, shortwave radio.
Yeah, it's hard to stop it, that's for sure. And Voice of America has certainly got the tools to get the programming out there. Same with Deutsche Welle. But we've seen this happen in other countries. A little bit surprised to see it coming out of Turkey.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're kind of caught in the middle on a lot of different worldwide issues going on right now. And they seem to be kind of seesawing back and forth on a number of different things. So you're never quite sure how they're going to come out with their policies on certain things. So this one has certainly got VOA and Deutsche Welle got their attention, and we'll see where it goes from here.
So what is happening with our sun? Well, first of all, we've had some kind of bad conditions on the band in the last couple of days with a minor geomagnetic storm. So a crack opened in the Earth's magnetic field and stayed open for nearly 14 hours. The solar wind that poured from the gap fueled a minor but long-lasting G1-class geomagnetic storm. So people actually were posting pictures of auroras. If you want to see the beautiful pictures, spaceweather.com is the place to go and to get more news about what's happening with the sun. There is a sunspot that is growing, AR3053, that could maybe pose threats for solar flares in the coming days. So keep an eye on that. Sun is relatively active. We have a solar flux of around 121, and the sunspot number is 88. There is a coronal hole that might actually send us more solar wind on July 12th or 13th. So if conditions are not up to what you expect, that could be the cause. And the best way to actually know what's happening and to see the conditions or hear them is to turn on a radio and listen.
This is Glenn Hauser, on the air since 1987. You're tuned to the International Radio Report, 30 minutes of radio about radio, every Sunday morning on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and live streaming around the globe at ckut.ca.
Our next story brings us to some news from Afghanistan. The headline, a radio station educating boys and girls in remote areas. This comes from the PAWOK Afghan News via Mike Cooper and Glenn Hauser's World of Radio. The city is Khost City. A local radio station called Hawa has launched an educational program for thousands of students, mostly girls, in far-flung areas of southeastern Khost province in Afghanistan. Ayub Yad, head of the radio station, says thousands of students, mostly girls, enthusiastically listened to Radio Teacher. Addressing a gathering at the end of the third batch of Radio Teacher transmissions, he said people could learn from it at home or any other place. Today, we invited 50 most talented students and provided them with gifts. Most of our sisters followed this program at their homes. We decided to launch the training program to educate boys and girls in remote areas where education is not available or impeded by cultural restraints. With the completion of the upcoming Book 3, Yad hoped the students would be able to read and write. Mohammed Hashim, a resident of Zazi Maiden District, acknowledged children were learning lessons from Radio Teacher at their homes. Abdul Rahman Aryan, who hails from Nader Shah Kot District, said her sisters attended a madrasa, but like other seminary students, they could not even write their names. But after listening to the program on Hawa Radio, now his sisters can easily read and write.
Now, that's a very beautiful story. It's nice to see the use of radio because, I mean, in these areas, school is either impossible or very difficult to attend. Plus, you know, unfortunately, in many of these regions, girls are not at the same level as boys as going to school. So radio reaches everybody. Everybody can listen in. And it has one aspect also, even in a country where maybe they don't want you to educate certain people, like, you know, girls. Well, you don't know, because they're listening from their homes. So who knows, you know, and it's a great way to it's a great way to probably even spark some interest, because you're doing it with the radio. There's a magic with it. It's fun.
Yeah, you know, certain news sources and that that sort of thing have been shut down in Afghanistan since the Taliban control again. You're reading a story, you look at the good side of it, but you start to wonder, you know, yeah, how long might they continue to do this or Definitely. Be permitted to do this? So hopefully people are taking advantage of it while they can. Yeah. Whether it will still be there down the road remains to be seen.
So there's some upcoming ham radio contests.
Yeah, we have just a couple this weekend coming up. The North American CUSO Party, the radio teletype edition, is running from 1800 Zulu July 16th to 0559 Zulu July 17th. It's organized by the National Contest Journal. It's running on the bands 80 through 10 meters only, and it is only the RTTY mode.
There's the CQ Worldwide VHF contest, 18 Zulu July 16th to 21 Zulu July 17th. This is organized by the CQ magazine. The contest promotes VHF activity on the 6 and 2 meter bands with participation from around the world. So 6 and 2 meters. And the modes are SSB, AM, FM, CW, digital modes such as FT8, FT4, and MSK144.
All right, so a couple interesting contests there. Now, we have some big news.
Yes, we do.
From the Canadian International DX Club, Canada's national radio monitoring club, which is celebrating its 60th anniversary this year. And we have a couple special activities going on coming up shortly. CIDX has two amateur radio club stations. These are call signs that are listed as being administered by the club. And we do activate them not very often on the ham bands, usually to mark special events or anniversaries or things like that. But Gilles, you sort of picked up the ball on this one and decided 60th anniversary, you got your ham license recently, why not do something?
I thought it was a good idea because I thought, yep, okay, now I got my ham license, let's go for it. So we're going to activate special event stations from the club. For me, it's going to be the VE2AQP call sign that I'll be using for the Eastern Canadian location or headquarters that are in Saint-Lambert, Quebec, but I'll be, of course, from my home in Montreal. So I'll be operating July 17th from 18 to 22 UTC, around 14 to 40 kilohertz upper sideband, plus or minus, depending if there's already somebody in the frequency when I get there. So we're going to move up or down as not to interfere with anyone. And in the Western Canada side, there's going to be activation of VE6SWL. And this is going to be from Sherwood Park, Alberta headquarters in the West. And the activation will be on, of course, July 17th from 18 to 22 UTC also. It will be activated from Lamont, Alberta, operated by CIDX Vice President and very interesting editor Mickey Delmich. VE6IDX is his own personal call sign. And he'll be on 14265 kilohertz upper sideband, plus or minus. So it'll be a little higher up in frequency. And we'll be, of course, working at the same time. So there'll be two stations you can catch if you want to try both. Of course, I'll be active at the end of the month again with the VE2AQP on 40 meters from 22 UT to July 31st to August 1st at 02 UT. We'll remind that later on, of course, on the show. Frequency will be 7150 kilohertz, lower sideband, plus or minus. We're going to issue a special EQSL for contacts. So we'll be, of course, happy to send an EQSL to anybody that submits reports to the station, to both stations, or if you only get one. And there'll be, of course, for everybody that asks for their QSL, a free sample copy of the Messenger. So maybe we'll get some new CIDX members through this, hopefully. So this is going to be really, really nice. And there will be more activations throughout the year. This is not just for this month. There's going to be more. I'm planning to probably do some in August and September also. There's going to be more activations. So if you miss out on this one, don't worry. There'll be more of it coming up.
Yep. We'll publish all this information on our Facebook page. And we hope you'll, if you're a ham operator, you'll look for the two ham stations on the 17th. And if you're a shortwave listener, you can tune across the band. And if you hear the stations as well, you can file a report also.
Absolutely.
We'll give you the details on where to send reports. And you're going to look after the ham reports coming in as well. And Mickey and Don Molman will be handling the VE6 SWL out west as well. So I think we're going to get pretty good coverage. We'll get a lot of publicity about this through other outlets as well as through our show here and on our Facebook page. So do try and hear the stations. Oh, yeah. Try to work them if you can. And we'll be sending you a nice EQSL. And if you're not already a CIDX member, you'll get a copy of our monthly bulletin, and maybe you'll decide to join us.
Yep, really looking forward for it. We're out of time.
Yep, we are. We thank you for tuning in. Lots of great stories today. As usual, after the show airs on Sunday, we'll put up links to all of these stories. And look for the information on the CIDX Amateur Radio Club stations coming up on the 17th of the month. That will do it. We thank you for tuning in. We'll talk to you again next Sunday with the next edition of our program, the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Previously broadcast program.
This is the Falkland Islands Broadcasting Station, broadcasting on frequencies.
Oh.